All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Friday, April 28th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you get started, keep winning, FanDuel and or DraftKings. As always, you head over to the site and grab a free 3-day trial through our projection system powered by our good, great friends over at Lineup Lab, where they will calculate optimal. What's that?
Acquaintances at Lineup Lab.
Oh, buddy, come on. Don't let Blake hear you say that. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month. After that, I'm already thrown off about the read. DFSR.com/MLB will give you all the information. And if you want another read of that, just go listen to all the other podcasts we've done, because they kind of say the same thing at the beginning of every pod. All right, we have a full Friday of baseball. Pretty interesting set of games here, coming off a day where yesterday the evening went pretty well on the shorter slate. The morning was kind of so-and-so, kind of missed that. It was unfortunate.
Yeah, well, we knew once Syndergaard got scratched that how great we felt about that early slate really kind of went out the window.
Yeah, that was the problem, right? Like, and that actually happened 2 days in a row with Syndergaard, where we were just able to just jam in the next loser Mets pitcher that was able to take the mound in his stead.
Oh, great call, yeah.
Yeah, where Harvey just couldn't get it done either. But moving on to a day where I want to believe we have something of the same sort of like ace-level effect going on for a full slate of Friday games. So we can start with Scherzer. You know, yesterday when we talked, we had said that, you know, there was this level of pitcher where it was like kind of Kershaw's at the very top, and then Syndergaard slash probably Scherzer exists in that second tier right below in the very, very elite class of just arms. Do you see him as going in against this Mets team? Is he just going to be the chalk pitcher today? He's expensive, so, you know, you're going to have to pay 11.6 on FanDuel, although I'll be honest with you, that doesn't even seem all that expensive, and then 12.7 on DraftKings. Is he the guy like we kind of don't want to fade tonight on this slate?
I think so. You know, Scherzer obviously does have, Scherzer. It's a tongue twister. He obviously has a pedigree that's kind of unlike anyone else on the slate, maybe except for Jacob DeGrom. And DeGrom is not better than Scherzer. He's just like sort of a slight tier below him, probably. The issue for DeGrom, of course, is that he's facing off against Scherzer. So, I think DeGrom's existence actually does temper the potential enthusiasm on Scherzer as a cash game play, at least a little bit, just because, you know, on any given night when Scherzer would be up against a team like the Mets, he could be expected to have a much bigger money line than he does tonight. That being said, he's still the clear number one pitcher on the slate for me. I mean, he's only a little bit more expensive than Carrasco and Arrieta, and just is such a better play just based on the matchup alone. Carrasco and Arrieta facing Cleveland and Boston, respectively, and Scherzer's up against the Mets, and the Mets have been a complete dumpster fire against right-handed pitching this year. 275 WOBA, just simply horrendous. Can't really do anything at all. Roster's a mix of young guys, and never has-beens and never will-bes, I guess is a way you could put it. So, yeah, it's a great spot to pick Scherzer.
Well, explain why Scherzer, like, maybe losing, let's see the money. The money is like, it's like minus 150 or minus 160 yeah. Right now. Yeah, it's minus 155 right now. Explain why that minus 155 is a typical Scherzer outing versus like a league average pitcher. You're going to see him at like minus 210, let's say. I'm just kind of making that up, but I bet you I'm pretty close on that. And explain why losing, you know, minus 60 relative points of money line makes a difference for a guy like Scherzer, like especially in his price tier.
Yeah, sure.
Like in terms of projections, I guess.
Yep, that makes sense. Well, so for starters, you get a lot of points when you win in daily fantasy, right? Winning is a binary outcome. You either get a win or you do not. And if you get one, then you feel happy because you wind up getting the extra 6 points. And so that's worth about 2 innings pitched or 2 strikeouts. That's a very, very meaningful amount. I mean, anyone who could add 2 strikeouts per start or an extra 2 innings pitch would immediately be worth consideration. It's like 2 singles. You know, you get the idea. You know how the scoring system works. So why is a 210 a big difference over a 155? Well, our research has shown that in the last few years, starting pitchers get about 70% of the time when their team wins a game. And that number obviously goes up the deeper you tend to pitch into games. Scherzer's an innings eater and a great pitcher. And so him going into a game like this, some decent percentage of his projection is going to come from the likelihood that he's going to get a win. You know, if the Nats are 60% to win a game versus 54%, that's just worth a couple points. And baseball is such a game of thin margins that the money line really matters. And actually going the opposite way, DeGrom's a guy that will be happy to roster on many given nights. But the fact that he's an underdog in this game, which is unusual for him, kind of, not that it rules him out of consideration completely, particularly for big tournaments where, listen, anyone can just get a win. This is something I talked about in a video series I produced for Roster Coach recently, where people go into big tournaments and don't, I think, fully understand that it doesn't really matter if you're an underdog or a favorite, because somebody's going to get the win and somebody isn't. Like, even if you're facing Kershaw, you can still get a win against him. But for cash game purposes, that really matters, because DeGrom is a lot less likely to get a win tonight than he is than usual. And to say nothing of the fact that the Nats have just been one of the best teams, I think the second best team in the league against right-handed pitching. So, yeah, it's not a great spot for DeGrom, unfortunately, but it's still a good, but maybe slightly better, less good than usual spot, just because he's up against DeGrom.
Yeah, you need to be able to, if you're doing a projection system, you need to be able to calculate basically what we call win shares. You know, the likelihood that a pitcher is going to get the win. It's difficult, but money lines are about as, I hate to say highly correlated, because it's actually not totally true, but about as good a correlation as you can find in terms of figuring that out, going, you know, with relevant information going into the game.
Well, correlation is not quite the right statistical term. I think you're on, and I'm agreeing with you, because I think that's right. What you were saying. But I think that when people hear that it's not quite correlated, they might feel confused. It actually is. It's a much better predictor of which team is going to win and lose than any other thing you're going to find out there.
Yeah.
And trying to correlate them specifically, like, you know, does a team that Vegas says is 60% favorite to win 60% of the time, you know, maybe not exactly right. Like, it's not going to be as good as some other type of predictors out there, but it's still going to be pretty damn solid over the course of a full season.
After Scherzer, which I do think he's going to end up being the chalk play pretty much across the slate. He doesn't totally crush you on salary on either site. We've been able to find this year enough value with bats that we don't really need to make. We're not really needing to just go totally crazy with pitching just to roster up these, you know, these expensive bats. There's been enough lineup shakeups and guys moving up in the order, just kind of those situations to get enough savings. So I do think you see Scherzer end up as the most sort of just most highly owned player after him. You mentioned the case against DeGrom, and I think that's you know, just I'm kind of in lockstep with you on that. I do think he's a decent tournament play in the sense that you go the other way against Scherzer, who could be chalk, but that Nats lineup is a real buzzsaw, especially adding Eaton to the top of that lineup has been. You're going to have trouble getting through that lineup multiple times, I believe, just really for any pitcher. After those two guys, you see anyone else sort of like standing out as maybe starting pitcher two, as, you know, a guy with upside, anyone else kind of jumping off the page to you?
Yeah, sure. So I guess I'm thinking mostly on DraftKings here, where you actually do have to roster a second pitcher. And a guy I'm looking at is Robbie Ray. Ray was interesting last season because he kind of went from a guy who was somewhat off radars into a fantasy darling after adding a full 3 Ks per 9 to his K per 9 total. He's continuing. He went from 8.4 up until 11.25, which is the highest of any stage in his career, including the minors. So who knows? Maybe he found a new pitch or something. But he's just also a young guy. He could just be developing. But yeah, he's back to his old ones this year. 11.4 K per 9 over the 23 innings he's pitched. He's been very wild with 5 walks per 9. And so he's been pretty erratic. And that's not exactly where we want to be when you're pitching in Arizona. But interestingly, he's actually facing the only team in the league who gets an offensive downgrade by coming into Arizona, and that's the Rockies. Right. And the Rockies have been just abysmal against right-handed pitching, or on the road specifically, over the last couple of years. And while, yeah, it's still great to hit in Arizona in a vacuum, it's not quite as good as Coors. And I think that Ray's price reflects enough of a value that we can slot him into that pitcher two slot, get some upside on the K per nine, and not feel too bad about it.
Just quick, looking quickly at Robbie Ray's pitch FX type, just because I was just trying to see what might be the big difference between the strikeout spike between 2015 to 16. It looks like he actually started throwing his fastball less and the slider more. So I don't know if that's like the exact reason. He looked like he was mostly fastball, slider, changeup, and then he went to less fastball, more slider, less changeup. So I don't know if someone realized there was just, you know, and when you look at those things like that and you do see a stark difference in maybe approach and strikeout rate, those are the kind of things that lead me to think that it is like more sustainable over the long term, if that makes sense.
Yeah, when they're like, hey, Robbie, we noticed that no one ever hits the ball when you throw your slider, but they always hit home runs when you throw your changeup. So I don't know, like maybe we switch it up a little bit.
Yeah, and like, yeah. And the Rockies, they have, you know, they have Arenado at the top of the lineup that can hit right lefties pretty well.
Yeah, and my bad, I think I just called him a righty earlier, but yeah, Ray's of course a lefty.
Yeah, yeah. So there's Arenado there, but then you have Blackman as a lefty, and you get LeMahieu. They have a couple of guys, but you know, judging the Rockies as quote unquote guys is like not, you know, like fantasy relevant guys in this case is like not. It's just it's so difficult to do because they just
spend they have two different players, who they are exactly at home and who they are on the road. And the Rockies, interesting for me too, second lowest walk rate in the league against left-handed pitching this season, and the eighth highest K rate. So minimizing Rays walks with their kind of aggressive approach is going to really, really help us here. And I think, you know, that's actually one of the reasons, in my opinion, why the Rockies have been weaker on the road in the past, is because in Coors, it just makes less sense to sit around being patient because the ball just flies off the bat. And I think tinkering with your approach that much to optimize for your home ballpark has to have implications on the road too. So yeah, I love the fact that the Rockies don't walk here and that they strike out a lot. It just plays in all Rays' strengths, in my opinion.
He can be a tough guy to watch, like you said, because of the walks. He will get wild. He kind of like just, he runs counts kind of long in times where you just, especially if you're watching the game, it can be maddening. So there's nothing more maddening than watching a pitcher that you've rostered run long count after long count, or just like not be able to put a guy away. So that can make baseball. That's why I just sometimes just choose not to watch baseball.
That's a quintessential example of a guy like that in your mind. Like when you think like,
Kent Tomato. I just thought that is exactly.
I'm going to say Daisuke Matsuzaka, but I guess that's kind of old school now.
But yeah. There's these guys that just like, they just can't seem, I know I'm just kind of probably making up my head, but Ray does strike me as that. But it's borne out the fact that you just walk a lot of guys. Like, if you walk a lot of guys, you do run a lot of long counts. One guy I'm kind of taking a look at here is Samardzija. He gets to face the Padres. The Padres are not as bad as they were last season, but that's like, you know, that's a relative term because they're still bad. They're still in the bottom third of the league against righties. They strike out like fourth or fifth most against righty pitching this season. Samardzija is another guy where it's not necessarily in the Robbie Ray mode because we don't have a large enough sample size on it, but he first career was kind of just existed in this like 7K per nine just sort of area, and you know, not a bad pitcher, but it's pretty unexciting. And then all of a sudden this year, in a short sample, he's been striking out about 11 Ks per nine, somewhere in that range. I don't know if it's sustainable or not. I would suspect we see some regression just because, I mean, short of like one of those just total just, I don't know, approach changes from a guy, usually guys don't just become much bigger strikeout pitchers later in their career. I still like him though, because I just don't think the Padres are very good. The good ballpark. He does have some stuff. He'll go. And one thing for him, or what has been good for him for his career, is he actually has been able to go late in games just by inducing contact and just keeping his pitch count low. So I could see Samardzija coming in as a starting pitcher two type. I wouldn't feel great about it, but money line in his favor and low implied runs for the Padres. Does it make sense?
Samardzija's line two for the season. I think a lot of people are going to be spooked when they see the 7.4 ERA. That's almost all of that comes from the seven runs he gave up to the Rockies. So I just wouldn't put too much stock in the ERA this early in the season.
With Samardzija, you know, you made a good point about the ERA and looking at ERA as compared to xFIP. The xFIP is only 2.86, which is excellent. FIP more than 4.4 runs, so you can kind of, the truth of the matter probably exists somewhere in the middle for him, which, and somewhere in the middle would be right around his career averages, which is somewhere in like that high three, like, you know, mid to high three.
Yeah, that
threes.
Tends to be how it works, right? For 32-year-old pitchers, they tend to just be who they are. So well, one but thing, you'll still take it.
Like, oh, Samardzija, yeah, definitely. And one thing I just looked at real quick is like that, you know, when the Ks jump, you do, again, same thing with Robbie Ray. I quick looked at Pitch FX type for him to see if there's been any noticeable change. And there actually is a noticeable change in his approach also. He's throwing his straight fastball more. And he got away from his cutter, I guess. He was throwing his cutter 20% of the time, and he just doesn't throw it at all anymore. Like, he just throws it 1% of the time. That's a pretty, I mean, look, only 24 innings. But for a pitcher to just basically abandon a pitch, that probably does mean something. Like, someone figured something out in the offseason and said, this pitch is not working. You've been throwing it 20% of the time over the last couple of years. Eliminate it, and we'll just throw these other ones. I don't know all the abbreviations for all these pitches, but I'm pretty sure that's his cutter. Anyway, so this is an approach thing, right? So those are the kind of things, like, someone got to him and said, do something different, and it could bear out in just, like, a slightly higher strikeout rate for the course of the season. I'm not going to like bump him to an 11K per inning guy in our projections, because that'd be crazy. But thinking that he could strike out, you know, maybe, you know, 20% more than he's been striking out for his career is probably not totally crazy to think about. So these are just some of the things you want to look at when you see noticeable changes in what a pitcher's done for a pretty big sample size, like for a guy like Samardzija, and then all of a sudden doing for a short period of time this year, and whether or not you think it's sustainable. Let's head over to the offensive side of things. We have some stacks that we can kind of probably put together here. This is feeling, at least at first to me, like a little more of like a one-off night. Like, you want to grab some, especially for cash games, grabbing value from a couple different teams. If I wanted to just maybe hone in on one team to start, though, is there a squad that's in a better spot than others?
Yeah, I think the Astros are kind of jumping to the forefront of my mind tonight when I'm looking at my stacks. Actually, I don't mind the A's going the other way either. It's interesting how some of these teams stack up against each other. But tonight's kind of weird because you get a lot of guys in sort of the good but not great category as you go through, and there aren't really a lot of pitchers that I'm too excited to stack against. Then there's guys like Ariel Miranda pitching against Cleveland, but they've kind of been a little bit lackluster. Anyway, the reason I'm looking at the Astros is really just the existence of Jarrell Cotton. I think he really slides in below the cut in terms of major league pitchers right now. He's a young guy, sort of a non-prospect, had some big seasons in the minors, but kind of out of relief and stuff, and he's just not getting it done this season. 6 Ks per 9 against 4 walks per 9. Just really hasn't shown major league stuff just yet. Astros, meanwhile, have, we talked about their approach on a previous podcast, but the additions of guys like McCann's and maturation of guys like Springer, these guys are just beating people up. So I really like the Astros tonight. I wouldn't even be surprised to see that money line tick up just a little bit more. The total tick up a little bit more, and to see them kind of be a chalk stack for big tournaments.
Yeah, the only thing that I keep an eye on, and this is one good thing about the one good thing I would say about baseball as opposed to basketball and to some degree football, is that teams that release their batting lineups way early, they give us just a lot of time to evaluate what's going to happen. Short of like the Tigers just releasing their lineup 20 minutes before the game started yesterday, which is the latest I've ever seen. But you know, they have sat Springer and Altuve the last 2 days because of just injury kind of stuff. Like Springer had a hamstring thing, I think, and then Altuve, I'm looking at this thing, he did collide with somebody. So we want to, I have a feeling we see that Vegas line. I get the sense that this Vegas line for them is sort of hedging on the idea that they're not sure if those two guys are going to play or not, because I agree with you that the line could tick up. I suspect we do see it tick up a little bit if they're both back in the lineup, like if they're back to full strength lineup. But well, I think we'll have that information well in advance, and that's the one good thing about baseball, I would say, is that plenty of time to evaluate. And actually, I will say, even if they weren't in the lineup, they hit Reddick leadoff yesterday. If that was the case again, I can't remember who they hit second, but if that was the case again where they moved some of these other cheaper guys up into the lineup, you're also in a great spot with them. So I probably, almost no matter which way the wind blows with that team, we're going to be wanting to stack them. I'm wondering your opinion.
Reddick is a classic guy, by the way, just before we move off him. Great upside play. If he's cheap enough, he's definitely reasonable for cash games. Do be aware that teams will pinch hit for him if he faces a lefty late in the game, just because that's just not his thing. So, yeah, just be aware of that. Don't be mad if you only get 3 plate appearances out of him or something in a close game.
Vegas is throwing for me for a loop here with the Blue Jays, because I spent the last couple days just saying Blue Jays stink. They're going to be bad. They're not a team running bad. They are just bad. And now they come into today where they have one of the highest implied totals of the day facing off against Blake Snell. They're back at home. They're an all-righty lineup. Snell is a lefty. I'm getting worried because I still want to believe the Blue Jays aren't very good, but they're coming very cheap in a lineup where they pretty much go righty all the way down the lineup. So where do we stand with the Blue Jays? Can we continue to roster guys like Pilar and Bautista, Steve Pierce, I guess, to some degree? Or are we still going to just work under the assumption that they're just like not a good team anymore, and it's going to struggle, and they are just going to struggle to put up runs?
No, I think they're a great stack tonight, actually, and I think it's kind of just the right moment to be a buyer on them. Heading back to the Rogers Center is always a step in the right direction for them, one of the best hitters' parks in the AL. And Blake Snell is kind of like if you could mechanically engineer a pitcher that you would want the Blue Jays to face, it would be Blake Snell. Last 2 seasons, 110 innings, 5.5 walks per 9. The guy just can't throw the ball over the plate. He's basically reverted back to the pitcher he was in the low minors when he kind of was flashing the big upside stuff, but also walking a lot of guys, except for he's just not having the upside that goes with the high walks. So he can really get blown up from inning to inning. I don't know that he'll be a chalk play necessarily, or the Blue Jays rather will be a chalk play against him, but I do think it's very, very good. And I think actually people have a much higher floor in this game than it might seem given their recent struggles.
No, I think so too. And I think it's going to be one of those, I don't know.
Is this you looking forward to getting feedback from our dear users on seeing Blue Jays in the optimal lineup?
I was going to take a long pause and I was going to edit out because I was trying to think of what I was going to say, but you jumped in and saved me there. Yeah, no, I do know we're going to hear probably things like that and be like, why are these Blue Jays coming in there? The thing is, when these guys are coming so cheap, so I was actually going to compare them to like a team like the Indians, right? So the Indians, if you look at just implied run totals right now, Indians are projected to score more. So they're somewhere like 5.25 runs, let's say. And the Blue Jays are like somewhere in like that 4.6 range. Of course the Indians are projected to score more runs. They're just a better team. The thing with the Indians is their prices have all ticked up into like the range of, you're just not getting them a cheap value anymore. Like guys like Carlos Santana, 4,000, Lindor is 4,000, Brantley, they're all right around 4,000 because they've been good and consistent to start the season. Now they face Miranda the lefty, and they're in a great spot, but you're not getting them on the cheap. See, this is the difference. Like, of course I would rather roster these guys than the Blue Jays. Like, it's just not, that's not the discussion. Unfortunately, FanDuel and DraftKings attach these other, like, pesky things called salaries to these players that mucks up the
works. I was going to use the word pesky as well, by the way, so that just knows that we're in sync here, buddy.
Well, this is we get a question all the time, like, so-and-so, really? Why him over, you know, Carlos Santana? I'm like, homeboy, they're $1,000 difference. You know, like, of course I'd rather play Bryce Harper every night. He's just $5,000. Like,
well, it's like if someone walked up to you and were like, why are you living in this house when there's that huge mansion down the street? Like, why don't you just go live in the mansion instead?
It's so much better down the street.
I was so stupid. I didn't even notice.
Yeah, I didn't realize I could just walk over there and put all my things there and live there for, like, you know. This is where I get that, like, you know, if you have half a brain, you understand this concept. So I'm not, like, speaking to you necessarily. But if you're a person that complains, like, why isn't, like, this really, really great player in the lineup? Because they're in a good matchup, it's because they're just too expensive. So this is where we're going to probably...
That's a good catch-all response for that. Right. I think actually on the same level, you could look at the Angels tonight in sort of the similar way. Guys like Mike Trout, because Nick Martinez, running joke over at DFSR headquarters over here, we've almost never been in a situation where our system didn't want to stack against Nick Martinez. I'm trying to think back even into like 2014, and I think we've been stacking against this guy for fully 4 years. And somehow... I feel like we haven't always done it on the right night somehow, even though the guy has a career.
I was hoping you got there onto the never done it on the right night part, because that's actually the part that kind of sticks in my craw. I'm like, I feel like we've done it. I've definitely stacked against him every single time he's ever taken the mound in the major leagues. And I'm just trying to, I almost need to go back and look at about how many times it worked out.
I see here that he had, no, I see the stat that he had a 5.6 ERA last season. I get it. It just somehow, and he only pitched 5 starts. But no, Nick Martinez, like, He is truly not a major league quality pitcher. I'm going to say this going to my grave, and it'll put me in my grave eventually, because it gives me a heart attack watching him go out there and pitch like 5 innings, 4 walks, 6 hits, no runs allowed. See ya. But like, that just happens every time. But anyway, I do think the Angels is a very interesting stack. Vegas is onto this as well. Yep. Angels coming in at one of the highest totals on the day too. You could still get guys like Pujols, Calhoun, I think are both very reasonable for their price right now. Trout getting a little pricey, but the upside is truly absurd.
Why isn't Trout in the top lineup?
Yeah, I don't know, Doug. I could not tell you. My Trout. I assume you screwed something up. But yeah, I mean, the combination of insane matchup with Martinez and in Texas, I'm channeling myself. I've written this in picks articles 15 times before, so I already know all the stats off the top of my head. But yeah, that's going to be a popular one, and for good reason. I think if you do save up on pitching for your big tournaments, you're going to want to have probably at least some piece of that lineup.
It's interesting, too, when you look at the way lineups are sort of just populating right now. This is well in advance of any teams releasing their lineup, so things will change. But you are getting this, like, almost 2-player per lineup mix of the teams we mentioned. So it's like 2 Angels.
Yeah,
just
the best value guys on every team.
Right, 2 Angels, 2 Astros, 2 Blue Jays. And it's actually mixing up some of those guys, like, kind of along the way. So it's not always the same 2, but it is kind of always 2. So I do like, from a cash game perspective, when that sort of thing happens along with a good pitcher, because it feels like sort of high floor territory, right? Yes, it's not going to work out for each of these teams, but they're all in such good spots. And actually, the other way to do that would be, so our thing is more geared to cash games, where it's just kind of put the best value pitcher and it doesn't really care.
The optimal lineup.
What you do, but what you can do though is you can actually probably make sort of like these hybrid cash and GBP lines by just stacking those teams, like double stacking Scherzer and then double stacking, you know, say Houston and Toronto or Houston and LA. And you're going to get something pretty close to the optimal lineup while also giving you some of the upside that you stacked, if that makes sense. So I think you're in a situation where...
No, I think that's an excellent point. These are the exact nights that I tend to play big tournaments. I don't often play them just because, you know, if I'm on duty for the system on that given night, it's just so intensive to keep up with all the updates and answer questions and so on. But on nights like tonight, it's just so easy to, because... it's the exact guys I want to play anyway. I don't have to stick my neck out. And that's when I get dollar signs in my eyes.
Ooh, like the cartoon one. Yeah, no, I got a pretty good visual of you having just walking around with dollar signs in your eyes.
Do you think steam coming out of my ears?
We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, dfsr.com/MLB. We'll get you a free 3-day trial to the projection system we've been talking about here. Head over there, free for 3 days, $29.95 a month. After that includes the rest of NBA playoffs. We'll include NFL when that comes around. Jump into the chat room, ask how things have been going for users. They will give you their honest response, and we believe that you will then sign up and stay with us for the long term, because that's what our users do. All right, dfsr.com/MLB. Buddy, enjoy your Friday evening. Enjoy the weekend. I will talk to you again next week, and good luck with MLB.
Yeah, man. Peace.